Shavuato world. Today's daf in Masechet Chulin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf tet, and we got up to almost, we're still almost at the top of the daf. Omer of Yonah Merav. Talmid Chacham tzarich shiyomon shlosha dvarim. There's three very important things that every Talmud Chacham should make sure that he knows. Ktav, how to write. Now, it's a question what that means, how to write. Rashi learns it means literally how to write. You may have to sign your name on a contract, or you may have to sign your name in a bezdin, or for edus, so you need to learn how to write. So it wasn't, remember, it wasn't all that nafuts that everybody would write. It requires things that people don't have, kalim to write with, and things to write on, and so on, which were rather difficult. But others learn that it means to write, like the Rashash says, it means to write the Sefer Torah, which, of course, is also something that you have a chiyuv. And others learn it means that you need to write, the Miri says it means you need to write beautifully. You need to write in a way that's presentable and that's a proper kavod for the Talmud Chacham, and that would be usable for writing contracts and so on, and that people would be proud to show. So it's a higher level of writing. The next thing is, besides ktav, you have to learn how to do shechita. The next thing, you have to learn how to do mila. And Rabbi Chananya Bar Shalmi Amishmei Rav Amar, let's add to that, af kesher shel tefillin, the kesher tefillin, which is rather complex to get that very particular knot. That's the kesher shel tefillin. That's the dalet. The yud is not considered to be like a kesher here. It's considered to be just like the ritzua that's shaped like that. So af kesher shel tefillin, and you need to do birchat chatanim to marry someone off and to say the correct brachas and the shever brachas, and how to tie your tzitzit. Ve'idach. So why didn't Rav Yehuda think that those things are important? He did, but he's not going to tell you you need to learn them, because everybody just picks them up anyway, because they're shchichin, and you come across them so often that you'll learn. V'yom Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, kol tabach she'inu yodea hilchot shechita, asur le'achol mishchitato. You need to know all of the dinim of shechita, ve'elu hein hilchot shechita. So this is the first time that Gemara has actually directly presented the hilchot shechita. Now, of course, we spoke about them before in the chashash of the katan, we said, because we had to go through the various, we learned it, because we had to go through all of the different dinim to figure out which ones were chayish with the katan not being a book and not being able to use his das, even if he knows the dinim. So this is the first time that we've had all five special halachas of Shechita put together by the Gemara here as this is it. Shehiya, Drasa, Chalada, Hagrama, V'ikur. And you remember what these are. Shehiya means that you stop for a moment in the middle of your Shechita. We'll be talking about those specific things and how long and at what point in the Shechita and so on. Drasa is, remember, pressure, downward pressure, too much downward pressure in proportion to the cutting back and forth. So that's the vertical and the horizontal. There's too much vertical pressure. Again, we're going to talk about what precisely that is, how much is appropriate. Chalada means that you're like, as the Gemara puts it later, kechulda hadara b'ikre habatim. So that's like being hidden. And it's like what it means to be hidden under the skin, between the actual simonim, does it mean even under a piece of clothing, and so on. All of those things we'll learn. Hagrama, which means that even though you started doing a regular shechita, but you went out with your hand, so hagrama means to slant a little bit, and you went outside of the area that's kosher for shechita, either upwards or downwards. Again, we're going to talk about precisely what those boundaries are as we go later. And ikur, which would mean the idea of tearing, but we'll see that that takes many different forms. Anyway, what's the chiddush? I mean, all of these things are basically in the Mishnah later on. I mean, it's the whole next parak is about that. So, Maika Mashmon, Kulu Tanina, We're going to see all of those things. So what's the point of Shmuel telling us that you have to know these things? Obviously, you have to know these things, because otherwise, how could you possibly shecht and our... You don't know what it means to shecht. Because lo tzicha sheshechet lefaneinu shtayim v'shalosh pa'amim. What Shmuel is coming to say is that the person knows how to shecht, and we've seen that he does it properly. And he's done it a number of times, and he has a chazak, and he does it properly, v'shachat shapir. So, ma'o detema medidach shachat shapir, hainami shachat shapir. So, we would have thought that, look, I mean, this establishes him, essentially, as having a chazaka to do it right. And what's the difference whether he can actually articulate exactly what it is that he's doing? He's doing it right. If he doesn't really know, if something happens that may indeed be out of the norm for him, but he won't even realize that the little problem is not a little problem. It's a big problem. It's a fatal problem. And in fact, his shchita is possible. He wouldn't even know. So how can we trust his shchita if he gives us something he shechted and he doesn't even know what it means to define shchita? The Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Now, another very important din that Shmuel teaches us here is that HaTabach Tzarich Sheivdok B'Simanim La'achar Shchita. He has to make sure that he actually cut through to make certain that he did the rov of the Shchita. And remember, you have to do rov of the Kana and rov of the Veshet. And if you didn't do Mamish, the rov, and remember, you're not actually cutting the Kanan Veshet yourself. You're not holding the Kanan Veshet in your hands. You're cutting through the neck. So the question of how much muscle there might be in the front of the neck and so on, you may think that you cut through it, and you don't realize that in this particular animal, you didn't get through rov. If you didn't get through rov, it's just a trefa. So therefore, you have to check afterwards to make certain that you actually cut through the rov.
Amen.
Omer of Yosef, Afanana Mitanina. There seems to also be a Mishnah later on that says this, because there it's talking about what is the shear of Shehiyah. Remember, we said we're going to talk about that later. So over there, one of the Shitas, what is the length of time that the Shehiyah was? Im Shaha Kidei Bikur. So Rabbi Shimon says, well, if it was long enough to do a bedika, what bedika? My love, kidei bikur simanim. In other words, you're shechting the simanim, you stop in the middle for a second, and how long is that time? Well, I mean, it's obvious when it says kidei bikur. I mean, doesn't it mean the time it would take you to look and to check and to see whether, in fact, there was a rov, right? So, okay, so then it's telling us already what Shmuel says. So Abaye said to Rav Yosef, why? How do we know that that's what it means? Actually, Rabbi Yochanan said it means something entirely different. Rabbi Yochanan, kidei bikur chacham. It's talking about, we're going to see later, that there is a takana, which is a takana really for the kavod of the chacham ha'ir. And obviously it has implications for the kasher standards in the community and so on. But the ikar takana was there for the chacham of the city specifically, that it's not enough to have someone check a knife. You need, when you're doing the shchita, you need to first show your knife to the Chacham Ha'ir and let him look at it. So maybe that's what it means. That's what Rabbi Yochanan said it means. So it's not talking about anything about looking at the simonim. So therefore, it has nothing to do with Shmuel. But I don't understand. If the shiur is a shiur that doesn't have any particular length. I mean, doesn't it matter, like, where this chacham is and how far you've got to go or how he has to come? Or, I mean, like, I understand, what if the taxi is late? I mean, do we need to include all of that? Like, what kind of shir is that? That's called antata dvorecha l'shirim. You say something that varies so considerably that it doesn't make any sense as a shir. No, obviously I don't mean literally the Chacham Ha'ir. I mean kidei bikur tabach chacham. Let's imagine that the tabach himself is the chacham. So what it means is the amount of time that it takes to actually check a knife. Then we're going to have to talk about specifically later on what that bedika is, how you check the knife and so on. But that is already not something that is l'shiurim. Anyway, what would be the din if you didn't? Shmuel says that you have to look at it, and that if you didn't do it, so what? What would be the din? Suppose you never looked at the simanim, and the meat was now put on the market. Is the meat kosher or what? Says Rabbi Eliezer ben Atignos, Bishum Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Yanai, actually, it's totally treif. It's not kosher, and it can't be eaten. And in a braita it says, forget about it, it's being treif. It's not just treifa. It's an avela, and it's metame b'masa. It's literally an avela, and it will be metame you. There's a big difference between an avela and a treifas, but an avela is much more chomor, because it's also metame. So what's the machlokas over here? I mean, it's fascinating. You're telling me that we can't rely on a shrita, so why would they argue about whether it's an avela or not? They're arguing about a very important yesod, and that is the yesod of Rav Huna. Rav Huna points out that a behema b'chayeha b'cheskat isur omedet ad sheyivada lecha b'mat nishchata. While the animal is living, there's a chazaka that it's completely usur. What is that isur? That's already a shayla. Precisely what that issue is. I mean, so Rashi says over here, it's called Aver Menachai. So since it was definitely, you wouldn't be able to take any of its meat before you shechted it, because that would be certainly usur. But other Rishonim, Taina, it can't be because of the chazak of Aver Menachai, because the animal is definitely not alive. So why would he have a chazakah when it was alive to carry over to when it wasn't alive? So therefore, other Rishonim learned, particularly the Rashba, defines it as an iser called enazvucha. It's an animal that has not been shechted. And since the Torah says, v'savachta kasher tziviticha, that without that, you're not allowed to eat it. So therefore, says Rav Huna, look, if you can't establish that it was zavuach, so then you don't have a right to eat it. And therefore, it's considered to be a cheskas iser. So, the question is, since until that time, I mean, it seems to be that it's also, so we're going to consider it not to be shechted still. So why isn't it an avela? That we're going to see. Once it's nishchat, so then it's becheskas heter, until you know, unless you find out afterwards definitely that it was nitraf. And we're going to talk about both of these ideas. So here the machlokas, in the Tana of the Braisa, he holds that it's becheskas iser. Look, you said it's ena zavucha. And is it dead? Yes. So it wasn't shechted. Last I heard, an animal that wasn't shechted and is dead is called an avela. So I don't get it. I mean, if it's an avela, it's an avela. So why would it not be metame? But Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yanai says, a chazoka does not define a physical reality. Chazaka defines a halacha. How do you go from the fact that you had a cheskas iser of eating it, because ena zavucha, to the idea that it's an avela and it's metame? That chazaka had nothing to do with its. Did it have a chazaka being an avela? No. So what made it an avela? The fact that it's dead. But the fact that it's dead doesn't tell us that it's an avela, because maybe it was a shkuta. Yes, but it was a chazaka that ena zavucha. But that's only an iser achila. So therefore, Taina's Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yanai, becheskat isur amrinan, absolutely. It's the same chazaka. But how did that cheskas isur turn into a din of tuma? So therefore, we cannot assume that it's actually tummy. And becheskas tuma lo amrinan. Okay, we'll see more of this as we go along. Gufa. So let's take a look at Rav Huna's statement. Om Rav Huna, behema b'chaya b'cheskat isur omedet, ad sheyivada lecha b'mat nishchata. So now we see, we have a machlokes how far that extends. What's this last business about? Nishchata, now it gets a cheskas heter. What do you mean it gets a cheskas heter? If it was nishkata, it's mutter. What is the word? Keskas heter. I mean, I saw the shkita, so what's the problem? Because keskas heter omedet, achi yavadalacha b'man nitrafoho. I mean, obviously, so just say, nishkata hutra. No. A kamashmaman, the chiddush over here is that avagav dis yalid be'reuta. So even though there is a problem, so a reuta is something that weakens the chazaka and tells us, look, it ain't necessarily so, because look at this. This raises suspicions. So raises a suspicion. So what would be the case? Well, let's take a look at a case that actually came up. This was actually, Ravuna was asked exactly this point. Suppose, so comes along a wolf, grabs the b'nei me'ayim, the intestines of an animal. So what's the den? It's full of holes, right? So the shaila is, if there was a hole in those intestines before the wolf got at it, so then it would have been a trefa. What's the question? What do you mean? A wolf came and took the intestines. Okay, so then bye-bye intestines. What's your problem? Where's the reyesa? Certainly a wolf is not a reyesa, is it? It only attacked it after it was dead, and how could it have made it into a trefa? So if natal, it's not here, so there's no problem, is there? Ella, no. The question was, the wolf made a hole in the b'nei me'ayim. I don't understand. So, okay, if the wolf made a hole, so then we saw that the wolf made the hole, and we have no question that it was a trefa because the wolf made the hole, and there was no hole there before. So what's your question? He took those intestines, and then he brought them back with a hole where he had bitten into it. So now they've got holes in them. So now what's the din? We do see holes, right? So there is a reyesa. And the thing is, we've got obviously a good explanation, but there is a suspicion. If we see there's no holes in the intestine, that's fine. So then we have a kosher animal. Right now we see puncture holes. We have no way of knowing for sure that all of these holes, or even if it's a single hole that was there before the wolf bit in it, maybe there was a hole there, and it bit directly into that one place, those are possible. And therefore, there's the question of the reyesa versus the determination of what to be tailor the reyesa in are two different things. There's definitely a reyesa. In other words, we have an intestine with a hole. So you're telling me, yeah, but don't worry about it because you have what to be semech on. Well, that's not exactly the same as not having a reyesa, now is it? Because the chazaka is shaken. You can't say, the chazaka was, everything was fine, Great, we know it's not fine. So what's the din? Omar Leiser of Huna says exactly this point. Once there was an act of shechita, and at that moment we considered the animal to be mutter, that created a cheskas heter. If there's subsequently a reyesa, that reyesa can't go against the cheskas heter of the moment of the shechita. Now, obviously, we've got to understand what that means, because we're attacking the question of whether the shechita was a shechita. So what does this exactly mean? So Omar Le, ein choshishin shema b'mokom nekev nakav. Really? Well, is that the case? Eisvei. We have a braita that seems to say that actually that's not true. Because if you find someone, ra'at zipor hamenaker b'te'ina, let's say you see a bird, and that bird was pecking on maybe on a fig, or you see a mouse that's biting into a watermelon, And now there's a hole in it. Well, then you've got a problem. You can't eat that because choshishin shema bimkom nekev nakav. So now, you never establish that there was no hole in this watermelon. Now, what's the problem if there's a hole in a watermelon? That's a din of gilui. Wherever it's possible that a poisonous snake had actually punctured into a food stuff, then we don't allow you to eat it. That's a din of sakona, and anything that has any remote possibility of being poison is usher to eat. So now you see a hole. Uh-oh, how did that hole get in there? And that raises suspicions. It's very much like today, if you have a bottle of medication and it's been open, you don't use it. Or if you have some baby formula stuff and it's been open, you don't use it because you don't know whether some poisonous sherets got into it. It may look human, but it's still a poisonous sherets. Anyway, so that kind of concept.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Couldn't it be that somebody made the hole to pour in vodka into the watermelon?
Well, in certain places. With So the question is, how do you say that we're not worried about the hole? Apparently, even though this takes it even a step further. We said, look, you know, if you saw the wolf make the hole, so then there's no problem. Over here, we saw the mouse make the hole, right? And it's still a problem because who knows? Maybe there was a hole there before. Since there is a hole now, the reisa is the reisa. The fact that you have what to be toiled in is a completely different issue. So you no longer have a chazaka. So why did Ravuna say that when it comes to the wolf, you do have a chazaka? It seems to be exactly the same issue. Omar Leh said Ravuna to Rav Abba, I don't understand your question. Are you comparing elements of sakona? Issues of possible danger are much more chomer. Miko medamita isur la sakanta. When it comes to isur, okay, so we have the guidelines that the Torah gives us, and those are halachic guidelines that this is the case that the Torah allowed you to rely on. But as I've explained to you, relying on these things has nothing to do with reality. It has to do with halacha. And unfortunately, your being alive or dead has to do with reality. And therefore, if you're going to drink that poison and die from it, you're not going to be able to tie no, I'm not supposed to die because there's a chazaka. That's crazy. So obviously, the sakana, we can't rely on the chazaka. But when it comes to iser, we can. What kind of weird question is this? So Mika Midamita, Isra La Sakanta, we're much more chomer on that Sakana shiny. Omar Le Rava, I don't understand. How do you know that? Maishna. I mean, look, we've got a klal, the suffix Sakana, you have to go Lachumra. Suffix Isura, we also have a klal. Suffix Isura, we go Lachumra. So, I mean, how do you know that when we make that determination, that it follows different guidelines? I mean, how does Ravuna know that we have to actually be more machmir on the sakana? Oh, my Abaye, what kind of weird question is that? Everybody knows you have to be more machmir. Well, shiny ben yisur le sakanta? I mean, there's so many examples of this. That, of course, sakana is much more chomer. It's a classic example. You've got a suffix tuma in Rishus HaRabim. Okay, what's the din? The din is the Torah said a suffix tuma is sveiko tahar. Masha Enkein, if you don't know whether you had a glass of water that maybe a nachash drank from, and because it was left uncovered, that is usur. I don't care where it is. It could be in Rishus HaRabim and whatever. So obviously we treat the sakana more chomer. Says Rava, well, wait a minute. Omar Leh. So Rava says, actually to Abaye, that's no question. The halacha that suffik tuma brishut harabim is always lakula. That is a hilchat gemirah misota. Did you forget that we have a din of suffik in the Torah? Now, it's true that this din of suffik, it's the only place that the Torah tells us how to act in case of a suffik. The only other place that you could remotely relate to this is the din of an ashram toloi. But that's the problem of you having a fear of something in the past, not how it is that you treat a doubt about something. The only place where the Torah tells us precisely what you need to do is where you suspect your wife of adultery. It's the only place. And, fascinatingly, the Torah insists on calling that tuma. So it talks about nistra v'hi nitma'a, or nistra v'lo nitma'a. So this is the first place in which the overall idea, which is very esoteric, of tuma, suddenly comes to mean something real to you. you find your wife to be, to may not have been ruined by something, something physically changed about her just because she slept with another guy. And nonetheless, for some reason, you find that to be something that destroyed her. It's no longer the same person. What is that? Very esoteric. I mean, would you come up with that idea? So essentially, it's an extension of this concept of things being what they are, unaffected by death, evil, and so on. But those things are not physically detectable. And nonetheless, the only place that we have it is there. And that's why the Torah insists on calling it tumah. You want to know how to deal with tumah, says the Torah. So I'll tell you. If she was Nistra, so what does Nistra mean? Well, two's company and three's a crowd. So that means if she wasn't Nistra, if there were three people there, including, obviously, the suspected adulterer, the suspected adulteress, and a third party, because she's no longer Nistra. So in that case, we have to go through this whole birur. But up until that, she becomes asura to her husband, until she does whatever can be mevarah that suffix, which, of course, is only given to you specially for that particular case. You can't actually take a nevela, a suffix nevela, and put it through meseta or anything like that. But this is one place where it tells you all about a suffix. So here's the deal. If this took place and it wasn't Nistra, there's no options at all. She's not asura. Now, look, I mean, anybody that's got any brains knows how to make out in the dark with 20 people around, and nobody's going to know what they're doing, as Tosis points out in Saita, in Nida. So you can't say she wasn't Nistra. You can say she wasn't Nistra in the way that the Torah is calling it Nistra, which means that there's only two people there. But that is telling you something. It's telling you that you don't even consider a suffix about Tuma if it's a place where there are people. So we call that Rosh Hasharabim. It has nothing to do with Rosh Hasharabim vis-a-vis Shabbat. It has to do with the number of people that are in the area. So that means that if you've got a problem with Tuma, so this is obviously, we never figured this out on our own, but we have Halacha L'Meshim Sinai that tells us that the use of the word Nitma is not a metaphor. And the use of the word tuma v'nitma in the case of sota means to teach you the dinim of tuma. And therefore, if you have a suffix tuma and it's in a place where there are three people, then it is tahar. And only something that's in a place where there's not three people is tamei. And it's tamei. It's not suffix tamei. It's really tamei. The same way that she becomes a surah to you, so too does this thing which is tamei. It's considered to be a vadai tuma for all intents and purposes. Good. So now, that's a special din. What does that have to do with sakana? Ma sotaz only b'shut ha'yachid. Av tuma is only b'shut ha'yachid. And from there, as Tosis points out again, also in Sota, the opposite is also true. That means you can't even raise the question. You can't come into court and say, I warned my wife not to be alone with this guy, and she was in a taxi cab with him. Well, no, I guess there's a driver in a taxi cab. She was in a what do they call those self-driving taxis? I forgot them. there's one place where they actually use them. And she was alone with him. He said, get out of here. What are you, crazy? There's people all over the place. That's not called Mistura. You know, so even though she obviously could have made out with him in whatever that thing is called, but that just does assist. That's the point, that's not called Mistura. Okay, so then that's a special halacha. What does it have to do with the issue of sakana to prove to me that it's less chomor and the sakana is more chomor? It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with a special parsha in the Torah, halacha l'Meshim Sinai. It's off the wall. Moshe Ripshimi. Ripshimi says, look, I think Abai is right. I mean, take a look at this case. A sheretz is, a dead sheretz, obviously, is in the mouth of a chulda. I guess we're going to use chulda because of chalada, you know. So anyway, there's a weasel walking along, and it's got itself a dead sheretz in its mouth. And it's walking calmly across a bunch of kikarot shel truma. Now, the question is, did the sheret touch the truma, or did the chulda walk tiptoe carefully through the truma? So that's the question. So now, safek naga, safek lo naga. What's the din? Sveiko tahar. The safek is completely tar in that case. Now, safek maya migulim, however, is different. If you've got a glass of water and you have no idea whether anything got into it, it's still going to be asur. So you see that sakana is more chomer. I don't understand what Rav is saying. Who tells you? Like Abaya said, we always see that. Now, therefore, it seems clear that you can't ask Akasha on what it was that Abaya was saying. Says Rav, that is just another example of the halacha l'meshe Sinai. It's completely irrelevant. I want to see a question of a halacha that's not about Tuma and that doesn't have the special dinim that we learn either out from Saita or from dinim that are related to Saita. And there too, we have the same halacha. It's not clear precisely if it's a machlokas, where directly it's learned from. But ilchata gemir la misota, just like a sota zedover sheyesh ba'adat lishael. Look. I mean, this business of the suffix, comparing a suffix tuma to a saita, raises some serious questions. I mean, usually sveikot exist on their own, right? I mean, it's something, the issue is raised. Over here, we are questioning this woman, her husband saying, what the heck were you doing with what's his name? And that means that there's somebody to talk to. Somebody to talk to means yeshbo dat li sha'el, that the suffix is raised binogea, a person that is addressable. So therefore, since we have great difficulty in discussing things with chuldot, and it was the chulda that was walking across the truma, so it's totally different. Afachanani, a dover she yeshbo dat li sha'el. In this case, they're tohar, not because we deal with Isser Bekula, but because of a special halacha that since the chulda is refusing to answer any questions about the issue, it becomes a suffik tuma that is tohar. So again, this has nothing to do with the question of whether sakana is more chaber than Isura. You keep bringing me these special things. Omer Vashi, okay, I got a regular thing, okay? And I'm going to prove to you from a regular suffix isser, nothing to do with tuma, and I'm going to show you that we're more machmer on the issue of the sakana than we are on the issue of the suffix halacha about something else. And as a matter of fact, I have a perfect example because I'm going to talk to you about snakes. I'm going to show you another suffix about snakes. And over there, where it's not a sakana, you're going to see what the din is. Take a look at this, okay? You've got a tsluchis, she'inicha megula, uba umatza'a mechusa. So now, this is not a glass of water. This is a tsluchit. Do you remember what a tsluchit is? A tsluchit is water that was filled up in order to make mechatas for the paraduma to be metayer. And we didn't yet put in the actual efer of the paraduma because the idea of the mechatas afterwards, I mean, that was used specifically to do the tyra. Here we're talking about this was water that was filled with mayim chayim el keli. And that mayim chayim el keli, that keli is called the tsluchis. Now, it's got all kinds of special dinim, and it has to be filled directly into the kli, and it can't have been used for other things, and it can't be mixed with other liquids. So now, you come along, you had to set aside, you hadn't put in the yefer pora yet, and it was basically left uncovered. You walk back in, and it's now covered. So now, what is the din about the Tuma V'Taira? So, Tumea, Shani Omer Adam Tamei Nichnas L'Shav V'Chisan. You know, look, things don't cover themselves, you know. So the question over here, obviously, this idea is based on Paraduma being complete. Remember, the Torah calls Paraduma Chatasi, and therefore it was completely tar. It's one of the most careful dinim that has to be totally tar. And so because of even any chashash at all, you know, maybe somebody tummy touched it, and therefore it is not usable for the chatas, for the paraduma chatas. It's not really a chatas, obviously. Hinicha bechusa. What about if you left it covered and you find it uncovered? Well, now, it depends. Im yechola chul dalish tot bimena. Or, here's the best part, nachash l'divei Rabbi Gamliel. So there's a machlokas about whether a nachash that drinks from something is going to passel it for the mechatas. And the issue is, it has to be, basically Rashi ends up with liking this approach better. It has to be that all of the liquid that's in that sluchit was mayim chayim el keli. If it went into something else and then was put back into here, it's no longer Mayim Chayim El Keli. So let's say if you took the Mechata, the Mayim that was meant to become Mechatas, you took it and poured it into a glass, and then you poured it back into the Tzeluchis, it would passel all the water in the Tzeluchis. Now, in this case, a Chulda, when the Chulda drinks, it's something of a slob, and it spits back, allows some of the water out of its mouth to come back into the tzluchis, which means that it's no longer Mayim Chayim El Keli. You can't use it. Then there's a machlokas, and according to Rabbi Gamliel, snakes do the same thing. They also will leak water back. So if water could get into it, for that matter, even if you are chayshesh, that maybe sometime during the night, some tal fell into it, you know, and there could be variations in relative humidity during the night, and therefore there might have been actually some tal that fell at some point, and it got into here, so it's mixed with other liquids. And since it's mixed with other liquids, it would be possible. So, we haven't proven anything yet. Now, the Omer of Yeshua ben Levi, why is it that we said, if the Mayim, initially we said that if the Mayim was left uncovered and you find it covered, so then it's Tameh. But it becomes, if it was covered, then it's found uncovered. So then we said, well, the issue over there is not as chomer. So we said over there, it just can't be used, but it's not tame. How do you explain the difference between those two halachas? Because in the first case, it was a suffix. Maybe somebody tame came in, covered it, and made it tame. In the second case, where we had left it covered and we found it uncovered, so over there we don't say it's tame. Why not? Why aren't we chashish that a tame person came and he uncovered it? And the reason is, clearly, so basically, we have, obviously, to consider whether it was a person or whether it was a sheretz, and if it was a person, was it a tummy person or a tar person? As you put together all of the possibilities, we can be tailored in a sheretz, could have uncovered it. We could have been tailored in Adam A, Tahar, or Adam B, Tameh. So the total number of cases is 2 to 1 of reasonability that it was Tahar. Because it's very difficult to find a snake that carefully picks up the cover and put it back on. And therefore, we don't have to be chayshish in that other case if that's what happened. So the darkan is not lechasot. So over there, we do not have the ability to be tailored in the sheretz, inami, taima dinicha megulav ba'umatzah mechusa. Look, there's another clear-cut issue over here. The reason in the first case is that you left it open, and now you come and you find it mechusa. Or in the second case, it was mechusa, and you find it megula. Okay, but suppose you just find it the way it was. No change. So what triggered the problem over here? The change. Now, what happens with Mayim Begulim? If there was no change at all, would it be possible? No. Would it be Tame? No. Why? Because we have a klal, lo machzikin ani sura. We don't. Why should we assume something happened to it? What, the moment I stop looking at something, it now becomes ruined? But when it comes to mayim megulim, the moment I stop looking at something and I leave it open, we'll see how long that time is, sufik mayim megulim are asurim. How do you explain that? Why in the world would they be asurim? Shmamina chamira sakanta miyisura. Shmamina. So obviously, because look, you're right, we have no reason to suspect that the snake came and got into it. And nonetheless, we suspect that the snake could have gotten into it, and that's bad enough. So that's only because we're dealing with a poison. But if we'd be dealing with the question of the halacha, is this thing okay to use for bechata sunat, it would be perfectly okay, because there's nothing that triggered the suspicion. So you see clearly that we go out of our way to assume the worst when it comes to poisons. And therefore, of course it was right to say that you cannot ask a question from Sakana to Yisura. It was completely wrong. Therefore, Ravuna said before, I don't understand your question. Sakanta is always Chamira Yisura. He's absolutely right. And Rava's complaint, what do you mean? It's both the same things. One is L'chumra and the other one is a Safek L'chumra. Big mistake. That's simply not the case. Okay, Rabosai.